Hello, everyone. This is Wayne Mattson with the Wayne Mattson Report, the Saturday Roundup, coming to you live tonight from Washington, D.C. This is not a tape program. We are live, and we'll be talking about quite a few things tonight. And before I forget, I want to give you the toll-free number if you'd like to call into the program. The number is 800-313-9443. That's 800-313-9443. Well, the first thing, of course, we'll talk about is what every journalist who's worth his salt, his or her salt, is talking about: the passing, after a very, very long career, of Walter Cronkite, the longtime anchor for the CBS Evening News. Actually, it was Cronkite was the first person who was referred to as an anchor. News anchor man, to be gender specific, but he was the first person referred to as an anchor man. He took over the CBS Evening News chair in 1962, and there's a lot has been written, a lot has been said about Cronkite, but I'll give you a different spin on him this evening, something you probably haven't heard in many other places. I never met Walter Cronkite. He was supposed to come one time to the National Press Club for a function. I was all prepared to meet with him. His name was on the program, but for some reason he was in poor health that evening and canceled his trip from New York to Washington, so I did not have the opportunity to meet with him. But I know an awful lot of people who worked for him at CBS News, knew him personally, and it's almost like I knew him, knowing people who worked with him so close. But anyway, we'll talk about Walter Cronkite and his career and some of his thoughts on things over his long time as an observer of world events. Actually, I think he also helped shape world events. It's very rare when a journalist is around that long to have that kind of influence. I also want to talk about the coup, the military coup in Honduras, and the Obama administration, particularly Secretary of State Hillary Clinton's sort of lackadaisical approach to what happened in Honduras. We'll talk about the how the Obama administration in many ways is more the same. They're not much different than the Bush administration when it comes to Latin America, and I think the reason for it is, let's look at who really funded the Obama campaign. Where did their money come from? It was Wall Street. Wall Street looks at Latin America as just one of their sweatshops, a place where, you know, they grow the bananas, they get the coffee, and where the cocaine comes from that the country used to feather their slush funds, their political campaigns, their black market economies. So we'll talk about why Hillary Clinton has been rather lackadaisical on and not very proactive in reversing this military coup in Latin America. Again, if you'd like to call into the program, the number is 800-313-9443. That's 800-313-9443. We'll talk, of course, a lot about Walter Cronkite this evening, but also we'll talk about some of the reaction, and we'll be back with those comments and your calls right after this short break. This is Wayne Mattson from Washington.
This is Cascadia Public Radio.
Okay, welcome back. This is Wayne Mattson with the Wayne Mattson Report, the Saturday Roundup, coming to you live tonight from Washington. And I want to make a quick comment before we listen to this clip. But probably the most memorable thing about Walter Cronkite was his coverage of the assassination of President Kennedy in Dallas in 1963. Walter Cronkite came out of the print business into live television through radio before TV. One of the hazards, of course, when you're broadcasting events as they're occurring is sometimes you just don't get it right. You're going on information that you know, there's all kinds of information coming in. It's much different than with print, because print, you have editors, you have people that, you know, copy editors that look at things. You had the chance to go back and check some of the stories, some of the sources, but you don't really have that luxury with live television. And I was on Russia Today recently talking about the Honduran coup, basically as it was happening. There was a couple of reports, one out of Noticias de Mexico, that said that the Honduran leftist progressive candidate for president, an ally of President Zelaya, who was overthrown, was assassinated. He was in a gun battle. They tried to arrest him. That story went out on Google News, that Cesar Ham was killed. I reported that because it was happening at the time. Turns out that Cesar Ham, I'm glad to report now that he turned up very much alive in Nicaragua after eluding capture, snuck across the border. But now you're going to listen to this clip about Walter Cronkite. You'll hear him say, hold on a second here. I want you to listen to this, where Cronkite will be talking about the fact that Vice President Lyndon Johnson had been hit, and in the melee in Dealey Plaza. Well, obviously that was wrong information. But anyway, I want you to listen to this, because it not only shows that Cronkite was the consummate reporter of things as they happened, but also that, you know, not everybody's perfect in these situations, and certainly that wasn't the case with Cronkite's report from Dallas. So if we could listen to this clip of Walter Cronkite reporting on the assassination of President Kennedy, and he's getting this information, of course, as it's occurring. He's got Dan also reporting from the field in Dallas, and another local reporter. So let's listen to this clip. This is probably the most memorable thing that about Walter Cronkite and his long career as a broadcast journalist.
Guide in our newsroom, and there has been an attempt, as perhaps you know now, on the life of President Kennedy. He was wounded in an automobile driving from Dallas Airport into downtown Dallas, along with Governor Connally of Texas. They've been taken to Parkland Hospital there, where their condition is as yet unknown. We have not been told their condition. At Dallas, in the downtown hotel room, a group had been gathered to hear President Kennedy when he was waiting his arrival. Let's switch down there now, where Eddie Barker of KRLD is on the air.
As you can imagine, there are many stories that are coming in now as to the actual condition of the president. One is that he is dead. This cannot be confirmed. Another is that Governor Connally is in the operating room. This we have not confirmed. The president was whisked from the scene of the attempted assassination, or assassination, depending upon his condition, of course, at this hour, by bus to Parkland Hospital. And the president undoubtedly is in the emergency room at that hospital, which would be on the first floor of Parkland. No word as yet. We are awaiting something more official. It is, of course, difficult, certainly, to go on scanty reports.
This is Walter Cronkite back at the CBS newsroom in New York. We have just been advised from Dallas that blood transfusions are being given to President Kennedy. Let us recall for you now what has transpired in this.
KRLD is reporting they've been told by somebody in the hospital, the president's dead. Only a rumor, but they've been told that KRLD is saying.
Well, that's a repeat of something that you heard reported to you directly a moment ago from KRLD television in Dallas, and that is the rumor that has reached them at the hotel that the president is dead. Totally unconfirmed, apparently, as yet. However, let's go back to KRLD in Dallas.
Operating room, we do not know what his condition is, but the report is that the president is dead. This is not confirmed. This is something that word just came to us a minute ago. The word we have is that President Kennedy is dead. This we do not know for a fact. The word we have is that he is dead, that he was shot by an assassin at the intersection of Elm and Houston Streets just as he was going into the underpass. The word we have is from a doctor on the staff of Parkland Hospital, who says that it is true. He was in tears when he told me just a moment ago. This is still not officially confirmed, but as I say, the source would normally be a good one.
That was Zeddy Barker at our affiliate KRLD in Dallas, Texas, speaking from the room where President Kennedy had been scheduled to make an address to three Dallas organizations. But an assassin's bullets cut him down on the way to that meeting from the airport. It was just an hour ago that the incident took place. We have just learned, however, that Father Huber, one of the two priests called into the room, has administered the last sacrament of the church to President Kennedy. Regarding the probable assassin, the sheriff's officers have taken a young man into custody at the scene, a man 25 years old. We just have a report from our correspondent Dan, rather, in Dallas, that he has confirmed that President Kennedy is dead. There is still no official confirmation of this, however. It's a report from our correspondent Dan, rather, in Dallas, Texas. We're now going into that Dallas luncheon the president had planned to address. Let's go back. Prayers, we understand, are underway.
That we may reveal that promise that shall be pleasing to thee.
Vice President Lyndon Johnson has not been seen in the corridors of the Parkland Hospital. He was said to perhaps have been slightly wounded in the arm. Mrs. Lyndon Johnson says that the vice president, though, is fine. Throughout the streets of Dallas, the Dallas police had been augmented by some 400 policemen called in on their day off because there were some fears and concerns in Dallas that there might be demonstrations, at least, that could embarrass the president, because it was only on October the 24th that our ambassador to the United Nations, Adlai Stevenson, was assaulted in Dallas, leaving a dinner meeting there. From Dallas, Texas, the flash, apparently official, President Kennedy died at 1 p.m. Central Standard Time, 2 o'clock Eastern Standard Time, some 38 minutes ago. Vice President Lyndon Johnson has left the hospital in Dallas, but we do not know to where he has proceeded. Presumably, he will be taking the oath of office shortly and become the 36th President of the United States.
Okay, well, that was Walter Cronkite reporting. You probably heard the bit about Vice President Johnson, being hit in the arm. That wasn't true, but that's this kind of reporting, especially in the days when you had only landline phones, very spotty communications. That flash had come over by teletype, something that doesn't exist anymore. Eight bells, I believe, was the flash on the Associated Press teletype to indicate they had a flash story coming in. But anyway, that is really the essence of the old line journalists and they're leaving us at a very fast pace. Something I want to mention here, and it's being reported now that Cronkite had a very stormy relationship with the CBS News and CBS Corporation head office, just like Ed Murrow did. Ed Murrow hired Cronkite into CBS, into the news, CBS News, and apparently Cronkite was going to do his first sign off by saying, "That's the news. Be sure to check your local newspapers tomorrow to get all the details on the headlines we are delivering you to you." And of course, Richard Salant, the president of CBS News, said, "We're not going to do that. We don't want people to go read the newspapers. We want them to get their news from TV." Well, in those days, the CBS Evening News was 15 minutes. How much news could you get? You can already see at this point in time the powers that were trying to limit the American people's access to information. And then this report on CNN, where they're talking to people that work with Cronkite at CBS, when they had the three, well, we'll talk about that. I want to get back to what happened with 3 Mile Island and Cronkite's coverage of that right after this short break. This is Wayne Madsen from Washington.
This is RBN, the Republic Broadcasting Network.
Welcome back. This is Wayne Madsen with the Wayne Madsen Report, the Saturday Roundup, coming to you from Washington, D.C. And before we go to this next clip, and Cronkite's getting beat up pretty bad by the Fox Newses of the world. By the way, they wouldn't know real TV news journalism if it hit them right square in the face. They are propagandists, something that Cronkite had no time for. But let's go. Kathy is on the line from Louisiana. Kathy, are you there?
Yes, I am. How are you doing, Wayne?
Good, good, good. Thanks for calling in. And I want to play this short clip. Cronkite was at a reception, some sort of social event, probably in New York, and somebody came up and asked him, and this clip is on YouTube. It's a very short clip, but asked Walter Cronkite what he thought about the elites and whether they really run the world. And you know, Cronkite is accused of favoring one world government. What he favored was the United Nations system. He had covered World War II. He saw firsthand what happens when international law breaks down, like what happened during the Bush-Cheney regime. And he thought that countries had to talk to one another, had to resolve their differences without going to war. So I want to play this short clip of this question that's posed to Cronkite, and you listen to his answer. This guy was far from anybody that believed in all this council on foreign relations stuff, and he might have been a member, he might have gone to their meetings, but listen to his answer to this question. It's very instructive if we can play this clip.
Well, we've been trying to discover if, in fact, there is an American ruling class.
I'm afraid there is. I don't think it serves democracy well, but that is true. But I think there is. The ruling class is the rich who really command our industry, our commerce, our finance. And those people are able to so manipulate our democracy that they really control democracy, I feel.
Well, how about that? What do you think about that? That's an amazing revelation coming from a guy like Cronkite who covered so much. He said the ruling class controls our democracy. What do you think about that, Kathy?
No, I think that it's amazing. One of the things that I had wanted to ask you, if you were aware of, since you were speaking about Walter Cronkite and you mentioned in depth his coverage of the JFK assassination, if you were aware of a documentary which goes into a great detail about a lot of details, a lot of footage that people haven't seen. It's called freedocumentaries.org, and the documentary is called Evidence of Revision. And it does also show clips. This particular documentary shows clips of Walter Cronkite as well. Are you familiar with that?
Oh, yes, yes. It's and what's amazing about that, it's a very long documentary, but it actually contains outtakes without comment of everything from the JFK assassination to Bobby Kennedy's assassination in Los Angeles. It's really instructive because it's really, although it's put together from just great archives, film archives, video archives, mm-hmm. There's no commentary, really. I mean, it's what really happened, and it's a very valuable documentary.
It is a very valuable documentary, but since you're, I wanted to bring that up since you're speaking about the media this evening. A lot of the footage that make up the documentary are, like you said, raw archival footage, and it's very powerful.
Right. Right, and we see now the blending together of news and infotainment. Mm-hmm. I mean, the coverage of Michael Jackson was just outrageous. I was out in Los Angeles last week, and you know, everybody out there, that's the big news, Michael Jackson. I mean, I heard Jesse Ventura on Larry King say, "Look, the guy was a great entertainer, but he's dead. I mean, let's get over this. This is too much coverage of this guy." And something in 1979, the Three Mile Island incident occurred in Pennsylvania, where the nuclear core melted down, and it happened. It just so happened that the movie China Syndrome was out at the same time, starring Jack Lemmon and Jane Fonda. I believe Jane Fonda was in that, but Jack Lemmon was in it. And so Cronkite's producer says to him, and this is from the CNN story, "You know, this is really uncanny that this movie should be so close to the bone, and it's just stunning, a stunning coincidence, and I think we could make a story out of it." This is Cronkite's response: "I'm not in the goddamn business of selling movie tickets." I mean, and I know that Peter Jennings felt the same way about this infotainment, and he worked for one of the worst when ABC was bought by Disney. I mean, it was an outrage. The stuff that they made him cover, he held his nose. I mean, he made a lot of money, but he had to hold his nose to report some of that stuff, and he didn't like it one bit.
Right.
But,
well, in this particular documentary, you can, since it is so long, I think it's approximately 6 to 8 hours, it starts from the very beginning of the Kennedy assassination and does show raw footage of Walter Cronkite speaking, but towards the very end, up to the more modern times, it shows the disintegration of real freedom of press to blatant propaganda. So towards the end of it, it becomes it shows more infotainment.
If you can hold that thought, Kathy, we'll be right back right after this short break. This is Wayne Mastin from Washington, D.C.
You're listening to the Republic Broadcasting Network, because you can handle the truth.
Okay, welcome back. This is Wayne Mastin with the Wayne Mastin Report, the Saturday Roundup, and we're talking about Walter Cronkite and his long career in journalism this evening. And I also want to mention something else. We often see how the news, and Pat, you've probably seen this many times, where they will hold off on reporting the news just to get people to watch later on. Cronkite did not like that. This is a comment from his producer at the time. His producer said that Cronkite did not like promoting pieces that were slated to run in the next day's newscast. And what Cronkite said in response to that, he said, for God's sake, we don't know what tomorrow's news is going to be. How the hell can we take time away from reporting today's news by promoting a story for tomorrow? Well, I've actually seen that with the weather. I've seen, they'll say, there's bad weather coming in, a threat of tornadoes, but more on, this is local news doing this, more on this at 11 o'clock. Well, that is just so irresponsible. You report that news as it happens. You don't try to hold it off to sell more dog food or soap powder later on, and that's what the media is doing. I don't know. What are your thoughts on that?
You know, you say everything perfectly, Wayne. I agree with you perfectly. There is the Weather Channel. I've seen that myself. They'll say this week's news coming up next, and you have to wait through several commercials in order to get to next week's, you know, weather prognosis. But it seems as if they are scheduling the news to run at a later time. I even see shows on TV that could be done a lot quicker on A&E and
right.
The History Channel. They make you sit through the commercials.
Absolutely, and that's their game plan. These decisions are not made by journalists. They're made by what Cronkite and Ed Murrow call the suits. And we know who the suits are. And I think it's also, Ed Murrow hired Cronkite. Ed Murrow, really cut his teeth in the McCarthy hearings. He took on that right-wing lunatic, Joseph McCarthy, who was trying to get us in a war. He saw a communist behind every tree. He died as an alcoholic up in the Bethesda Naval Hospital. But after Murrow did that, Murrow was basically fired later on by CBS News. And the same thing looks like it happened to Cronkite, because Cronkite, when he retired in 1981, he actually wanted to stay on as a commentator, sort of like Eric Severide was his commentator. And when Cronkite retired voluntarily, he had an average rating of 27 million to 29 million viewers. I would hazard a guess that not one of the cable news networks can claim that kind of audience today. But he was basically, Cronkite was moved out. They said no. He did a couple of appearances, but he was basically never invited back after some time to CBS News, the organization that he basically put on the map, what they call the Tiffany Network. And of course, that decision was made because Cronkite, of course, also cut his teeth on covering the Watergate. And he pulled the rug from under Johnson on the Vietnam War. When he came back and said, basically, this is unwinnable, Johnson said, if I've lost Cronkite, I've lost Middle America. And then Johnson decided, of course, not to run for re-election, but there were obviously people out to get Cronkite because of that, and I just think how would have Cronkite covered the Iran-Contra scandal in the 1980s? We may have actually, if Cronkite was there pushing for real coverage of that scandal, which we know involved George H.W. Bush, we might have seen George H.W. Bush impeached. And, of course, if that had happened, we would have never had W. But it's clear that, you know, people like the Bush family and their friends in big business, all they had to do was pick up the phone and said, look, we would prefer that Cronkite never shows up again on the CBS Evening News. And that's all it would have taken. And I have a funny feeling that's exactly what happened.
Let's see. You were mentioning President Johnson saying that if he had lost Cronkite, he had lost Middle America. That's interesting. You brought up Johnson because he certainly wasn't a friend of the media either. Going back to what I had mentioned earlier, this particular documentary, while it delves into various conspiracies that have undertaken in the country, it also goes into the presidency of Johnson and the media.
Right.
And
right.
Yeah. I don't think that the average person knows about the comments that Cronkite had made about the war in Vietnam being unwinnable. Who was the person? Was it Donahue that had made comments against the war before we went to war? He lost his job.
Right.
He could have been Cronkite. He would have lost his job if he had come out against the war.
Phil Donahue did. He had a show on MSNBC, and he came out against this Iraq war. And Cronkite did too. But of course, you know, they never they never, you know, really aired many of those comments. Cronkite did pen a couple articles for the Huffington Post. It was quite clear that Cronkite did not like the Bush-Cheney regime and made his opinions quite clear. But by that time, of course, he was quite elderly. They did, of course, use Cronkite after 9/11. For the first time in a long time, they actually had him on the CBS Evening News to discuss, you know, it was all, well, let's comfort the nation. And so here, you know, they hauled him out of mothballs, basically, and really misused him. They should have kept him around for comments about the Iraq War, which, of course, was their goal all along. They had plans to invade Iraq long before 9/11. And PBS did the same thing with Robin McNeil. They brought him out. It used to be the McNeil-Lehrer report. They hauled him out of mothballs, again, for the same purpose. But they wouldn't let either one of these two guys, believe me, stick around too long, because then they might, you know, might start saying things that would have made individuals very uncomfortable.
I mean, it really is a testament to the sad state of journalism, true journalism today. You know, he was a true professional, and if you take the situation that we're in today, he would have been tossed to the curb. He wouldn't have lasted as long as he had. I mean, they didn't even give him a role in PBS.
That's right.
Which is often criticized as being too liberal. He wasn't even allowed to do that.
Right. The only time they would have Cronkite on PBS is every, I believe it was every New Year's Eve, he would host a program out of the Vienna Orchestra. But, you know, I mean, that's not controversial. That was just, you know, having somebody who was well known, host that program. But, for all purposes, they dumped him in 1981 and really didn't want him back again. They did the same thing to Ed Murrow. Ed Murrow wound up working for the U.S. Information Agency afterwards, after he was fired. He got that job because of President Kennedy. But, you know, we really never heard much about Ed Murrow, the guy who, you know, they always point to as, you know, one of the great journalists broadcasting from London during the German Blitzkrieg. But they're very unforgiving to people who start to read off the script and who have a lot of, you know, a big following. And certainly Cronkite did. Murrow did.
Well, can you imagine the FBI file that Murrow or Cronkite would have today if they continued to be vocal and speak off script?
Yeah. And I think the truth be known, they had J. Edgar Hoover probably had files on both of them, and probably every other prominent journalist. I know one friend of mine, David Burnham, who was a journalist for the New York Times, who helped uncover the corruption in the New York Police Department. The whole Serpico, that movie was based on a lot of his reports. It was actually waiting to talk to Karen Silkwood, but she died in an accident on her way to see David Burnham. That was she had uncovered things about Kerr McGee, the company, but David had an FBI file. David Burnham's a white guy, but J. Edgar Hoover referred to him as a colored reporter for the New York Times. So that shows you how good how bad the FBI's intelligence gathering was when they couldn't even get the guy's race correct. But yeah, it was quite clear. And that, of course, this continues to this day. The surveillance of journalists, keeping files. I've reported that the National Security Agency is keeping very big dossiers on people who write about them critically. They want to find out who the sources are. So not much has changed, really. But what really has changed is the way the media covers this. These stories are relegated to the dungeons, and the corporate press won't touch them at all, because the corporate press is now the suits that Cronkite and Murrow had to contend with for so long. And as we see here, the Cronkite got into some, you know, voracious arguments with the head office, as did Murrow, and as did Peter Jennings at ABC, and as did John Chancellor, the late anchor for the NBC News, because it was John Chancellor who said, I think it's very odd that John Hinckley, who is a friend, the almost assassin of President Reagan, he said, I think it's very odd here that that Hinckley is a friend of the Bush family. Now, Bush was the vice president. Now, who would have benefited by the death of Ronald Reagan? Of course, Bush would have become president in 1981 had Reagan died in the hospital. So when Chancellor said that, I mean, Chancellor was gone too, and then he died a few years later of stomach cancer. But we see this this is across the networks, and people that say there has to be a better way to report the news. We got to get the corporate motivation out of this. I think they have a point, but I don't know what the solution is. The BBC, of course, is funded by the British government, as is Canadian Broadcasting, funded by the Canadian government. Is that a solution? Well, we know that PBS gets money from the government through the Corporation for Public Broadcasting, and we know that under Bush-Cheney PBS and NPR basically spiked stories and went easy on the administration. So that may not be the solution either, and I'm not sure maybe it's a combination public-private. I don't know what the solution is, but certainly the way things are now, that's certainly no way to go with
it seems that the only solution, if you would call it one, is to utilize the internet, but they're wanting to clamp down on that as well with the creation of the Cyber Command and information operations, putting out false stories, creating their own organizations and websites, putting out false information. I had a friend that was in the Marine Corps, and I found out that what they were doing in Missouri was they were having they were calling Marine Corps reservists back to active duty, not to go to Iraq, but they were going to the reserve headquarters, and their job was to sit at the computer and go to websites which were against the war and posting that had forums and were able to post items that were, against the war. Their job was to sit there for 8 hours a day and identify themselves as being a member of the U.S. Armed Forces and post positive things. That was one of their information operations to make Americans feel guilty for being anti-American if they were against the war. It was one of the things that they were wanting to do to combat information on the internet, but really, that's really the only thing that we could do. I don't think that we could remove corporatism from broadcast journalism. I think the internet's the only way to go.
Right. Absolutely. Anyway, I want to play this next clip here too. I think it's more on from Walter Cronkite, about Walter Cronkite. So if we can this is about a little less than a minute a clip again on Cronkite, if we have this ready to go.
Well, I think this is another example of why the administration doesn't want to go down this road.
Yeah.
Doesn't want to get this debate. I spoke to somebody yesterday who said, the problem is that nobody comes away cleanly from this debate. Not a Republican, not a Democrat, and now the House Speaker is ensnared in these questions about why she didn't push back harder and when she actually knew about these techniques. So here we are in a position where Pelosi is blaming the CIA, accusing the CIA of misleading her. You've got other Republicans who were in these briefings saying, wait a minute, we were all told what was going on. We all knew what was going on. There's now calls for the release of the briefing in full. This is not where the White House wants to be. This is not the debate that it wants to have. And it just goes back to a more fundamental point, which is the more you debate this, the more you realize that the politics of the time were incredibly difficult. And as many people who oppose these techniques now have to acknowledge that in 2002, there were not Democrats who were willing to stand up to the White House and say, no, we're not going down this road. This is wrong for America. That debate came later. A lot of those beliefs came later because at the time, nobody really wanted to get in the middle or stand in the way of techniques that might prevent another terror attack.
Well, that was David Gregory. Now, he was propagandizing for the Republican Party. He's now the host of Meet the Press. Now, we know what Cronkite thought about that kind of business. He although he came out against the Vietnam War. He did not propagandize for the Johnson administration, or the, certainly not the Nixon administration. And just compare those two people. I mean, we've got David Gregory, who's nothing more than a neoconservative Republican, now in the position of being the host of Meet the Press, as opposed to somebody like Cronkite. These two people don't belong on the same page. Of course, we'll hear David Gregory, you know, tomorrow talking about Walter Cronkite. He's not the guy to be talking about any journalist, because he's not a journalist. His degree is from American University in International Studies. He never took a journalism class in his life. And I want to read this one quote from Gregory about how he reports the news. This is from a conservative website, but it says Gregory, who is Jewish, says he relies on the Jewish law on speech to make editorial decisions for his MSNBC Daily Afternoon show, Race for the White House. That was the show he had last year during the election campaign. What in the world is he doing listening to his rabbi? He ought to, of course, he never had a journalism professor, but if you're a journalist, you don't listen to any religious cleric in making decisions on how you report the news. This guy is a fake, he's a phony, he's a fraud, but it just goes to show where NBC is today in hiring people like David Gregory, not only to report on things at the White House. No wonder George W. Bush and Dick Cheney got away with so much, having a guy like David Gregory in the White House press corps reporting on them. He is one of them. It's no different than the propaganda news people that served the Soviet Union and Nazi Germany. And that's all I'll say about Gregory. And we'll be right back after this short break. This is Wayne Madsen with Wayne Madsen Report.
This is RBN, the Republic Broadcasting Network.
Okay, welcome back. This is Wayne Madsen with the Wayne Madsen Report, coming in live from Washington. And we're talking about Walter Cronkite this evening. And another thing I want to mention, Kathy, are you still with us? Oh, okay. Another thing, Richard Salan, who was the president of CBS News, also said he didn't even like Cronkite's sign-off. That's the way it is. Salan, according to this report on CNN, came from his producer, Cronkite's producer. Salan's countered Cronkite, said, "We're not telling them that's the way it is. We can't do that in 15 minutes. That's not the way it is." So we can see that Cronkite, of course, had the same problems with the suits, as they called them, as Murrow did. Murrow, of course, in the movie Good Night and Good Luck, you'll see the actor who plays him talk about how he feared that, you know, entertainment was taking the place of news. Cronkite certainly believed the same thing. But I think they lost the battle. That's the way it is now, is that Michael Jackson, car chases in Los Angeles, missing white women off cruise ships. That's the news today. It's not the news. It's not who was really responsible for the coup d'etat in Honduras, which was us, which was the Obama administration. They allowed it to happen. Secretary of State Hillary Clinton, let's listen to this short clip of Hillary Clinton talking about the coup in Honduras, if we can play this this clip of the Secretary of State.
But I want to start with yesterday's unfortunate events in Honduras, which were a test of the inter-American system's ability to support and defend democracy and constitutional order in our hemisphere. The United States has been working with our partners in the OAS to fashion a strong consensus condemning the detention and expulsion of President Zelaya and calling for the full restoration of democratic order in Honduras. Our immediate priority is to restore full democratic and constitutional order in that country. Today, foreign ministers of the Rio group will be attending a previously scheduled meeting of Central American leaders in Managua, Nicaragua, to address the issue of Honduras, and tomorrow the OAS will hold an extraordinary General Assembly. As we move forward, all parties have a responsibility to address the underlying problems that led to yesterday's events in a way that enhances democracy and the rule of law in Honduras. To that end, we will continue working with the OAS and other partners to construct a process of dialogue and engagement.
Blah, 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 Hillary Clinton going on and on. What she's not saying is that the U.S. Is severing diplomatic relations with Honduras, pulling out its ambassador, cutting off all aid, pulling U.S. troops out of the base from which the planes took off that had orders to shoot down Zelaya's plane, along with the plane carrying three Latin American presidents and the general secretary of the OAS and the U.N. General Assembly president. That's what she's not talking about. By her flim-flam, saying this week that she takes advice from the Council on Foreign Relations. Now I think there are a group that really needs to be looked at closely when you have the Secretary of State actually stating that in public. But that's the way it is, as Walter Cronkite used to say. And let's just play this clip of Walter Cronkite sign off. Walter Cronkite, who was really one of the greatest journalists of the last century, really, if we can play this as a piece of nostalgia.
And that's the way it is. Friday, March 6th, 1981.
Bob Woodruff, ABC News.
And will be sitting in here for the next few years.
Well, that'll do it for us this week. This is Wayne Matson with the Wayne Matson Report. Join us this time next week for another Wayne Matson Report, the Saturday Roundup, and we'll be with you. And as Walter Cronkite said for so many years, unfortunately, that's the way it is.